The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
And the White House says that more than 600 federal firefighters have been deployed to Canada to help get the fires under control from about 17 various agencies. The U.S. also giving water bombers and other equipment to help the firefighters on the ground to help deal with this. So, you know, we are told that the president is receiving constant briefings. It already is a team effort here to try to diminish those flames.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Boy, the news is never boring, is it? There's always something happening. I saw yesterday on the news that New York City had the worst air quality on the planet. New York City, of all places. Just a moment, my colleague John Harper will be joining me. He hails from Connecticut and has been monitoring that very closely. But first, good afternoon. It's great to be with you today. I'm really grateful to be here with you today. I've got a couple special guests coming by today I want to put on your radar in case you've got to run. If you've got somebody who is having addiction issues or has maybe suicidal ideations, I'm going to be joined by a Catholic priest who battled addiction, Rosa Bubba. He's going to be in studio with me. He told me last time I spoke to him, he's buried more people under 40 than he has over in the past year. So what's going on? It'll be a great conversation. Plus, we'll take a look at the incorrupt body of Sister Wilhelmina. I'll share with you a little bit about incorruptibles. I had the opportunity to see many of them in my opportunity to travel. And some are absolutely amazing. I'll give you a little bit of the background on this phenomena of incorruptibility. And one of my colleagues here just got back from seeing the body. He and his family packed up the entire family. I think they drove about 8 hours. And he said the experience was profound. So that's all coming. But right now, pray for our country. There's a lot going on from California to Maine. Canadian wildfires right now to our north are still raging. And as you heard in that piece of audio there, the U.S. has sent about 600 firefighters to our neighbors up north to help them battle this. But the smoke that they're generating right now, it's still impacting us. I mean, people are saying the skies look like the fictional planets you know, you see in movies. The city's air quality index yesterday was the worst ever. In fact, it was the worst of the planet. And today, I think it's D.C.'s turn, so they're getting hit with it. I'm joined right now by John Harper, who has been monitoring this very, very closely, and he hails from Connecticut. John, good to have you with me today. Good afternoon.
Hey, Drew, we could actually see the sun for at least a little while today. There's a little more smoke today. You don't smell it like you did yesterday, but everything just turned orange. You were talking about unhealthful air in New York City. There is normally unhealthful air in India and also in Singapore. Right. Their numbers on a scale, this goes on a scale of 1 to 500. Their numbers are usually 110, 120, and that's really unhealthful. Wow. New York yesterday was 436.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's stunning.
Yeah, it is.
That I saw images. Somebody had put them up. I forget where I saw this. Of New York City in this dense, dense smoke.
Yeah.
And then they showed you the parallel to what happened at 9/11 when those towers collapsed.
Right.
And if you remember that video, my gosh, is people running through it just covered in ash. It was pretty amazing. What are they forecasting? Is this beyond us now? Are they getting any control? I know this is Canada's worst forest fire.
It is Canada's worst forest fire. 9.9 million acres have burned already in Canada. Those are the fires in the Canadian Rockies and what is happening in Quebec and Ontario. They are hopeful that with wind changes here in the Northeast and generally from any place from, you know, Chicago all the way over to the East Coast, that by the end of the weekend, the beginning of next week, we should see some fresher air.
Yeah, well, let's pray for that. I know a lot of people have health issues, and we heard a lot of audio about how this is exacerbating a lot of those particular issues. The other big news, of course, one we've been following, is the health condition of the Holy Father. A little bit later, Ashley Nerona will report live from Rome. But, John, what are you hearing? I know he went through his surgery yesterday. He's asking, I believe, for more prayers for his full recovery. He's up there in age, right? And any 86. Surgery is serious.
Yep.
At 86, boy, I think it takes a little more time to recover.
He's doing well. His doctor at Gemelli Hospital in Rome said even yesterday after the surgery, it was a three-hour surgery, and this specifically was to remove a hernia from the wall of his intestine and some scar tissue there, was sitting up today, sitting up joking and getting work done from bed.
Wow.
So that's good. And the surprise that we found out yesterday from his doctor is that the Holy Father had similar intestinal surgery. Remember, he had about, I don't know, what was it? How many feet of colon removed a couple of years ago by this same doctor? He had intestinal surgery in 2003 in Argentina.
You know, he's a victim soul, in my opinion. I really think that. I mean, the man has suffered with sciatica. He suffered with all sorts of ailments. And all these popes do. I mean, they are a shepherd, right, of their universal flock here. And I think there's so much that goes on both in their prayer life and in their personal suffering offered for the world. So I, you know, as a Catholic myself, I would encourage anyone who's listening, please say a prayer for the Holy Father. If you can offer a sacrifice, maybe you're going through surgery or recovery or sciatica or some other ailment that may come with age. Pray for him. All right. Pray for his prompt recovery. Another religious leader, so to speak, if I can gauge it in that, is of course, Pat Robertson in the news. Mm-hmm. Today came out. He's, of course, the founder of the largest Protestant TV network in the country. He died at the age of 93, a very good life. And, of course, he established CBN, the Christian Broadcasting Network. It was influential in bringing evangelical Protestantism to bear on politics of the country as well. What did he die from, John? What do we know about it?
I don't know what the cause of death is, but he was 93 years old and certainly lived a full life. And here's someone who is a Yale-educated lawyer. He graduated first in his class, went to Wall Street, made a fortune on Wall Street, but heard the calling to ministry.
I didn't know that.
And he went in 1961 and bought a bankrupt UHF station that nobody could even see in Portsmouth, Virginia, and ran it himself. And they came with a radio station. It was literally out of a shack. And the first two people he hired to do an afternoon puppet show in 1961 was a husband and wife team called Jim and Tammy Faye Baker.
Yeah. Wow. What a small world and what an era that was, right?
Exactly. And then, of course, he ran for president in 1988.
This is my first political campaign. I never ran for anything in my life. So far, with only one exception, New Hampshire, I have scored either number one or number two in every single contest I've been in.
That was 1988. You know, the significant thing about that is out of that 1988 campaign came the Christian Coalition, which then brought evangelicals into the Republican Party. Well, he started that.
Yeah, Robinson, I think he finished in second place in the Iowa caucuses ahead of actually George H.W. Bush.
Right.
With the help of his pioneering strategy of courting, you know, Iowa's evangelical churches. And mm-hmm. that has become a big, big thing.
Right.
Yeah, gosh, he had a huge following, though. I mean, he had a 3 million followers across the U.S. He had them sign a petition that he would decide to run, and, you know, he had a huge base. Pretty amazing stuff. But he's also the founder of other things, too, wasn't he, John? He was at ACLJ and some other things I had seen.
Yeah, exactly. And, of course, you know, the platform, the 700 Club, that daily talk show that was geared towards Christians. And that was a tremendous platform that he had for years and years and years and years. And, you know, and sadly, in the last years, became kind of a victim of some of his own comments, you know, in talking about the rapture and certain predictions and things like that. But, you know, you chalk that up to perhaps age, maybe. But you take a look at what he did and his footprint in not only Christian broadcasting, but his footprint in American politics. It's quite significant.
So, you know, in recent years, gosh, he's 93 years of age, on the air. I actually went to Haiti with one of the anchors from his network, and she's saying this guy was full of life and full of fire. He stepped back, of course, from the day-to-day operations at CBN and handed over leadership to his son, Gordon. And I believe he continues to be involved in both religious and political discussions. Overall, you know, Pat had a huge impact on the American evangelical media and conservative politics. He left a lasting legacy. Here's one of his final messages that he gave online. And if you find yourself overwhelmed by everything going on in the world, just take heart by the hope that he wanted to bring you. Listen to this.
This world as we live in is in a state of chaos. I don't have to tell you that, but anyhow, it's there. But there's something good for those of us who know the Lord. You remember back in Egypt, plagues came on the land of Egypt, and there were frogs, and there were gnats, and there was hail, and crops were being destroyed, and animals were dying. And the Bible says in the land of Goshen, nothing was happening. The Lord was sparing his people in the middle of chaos. And I believe that God's going to spare his people. and we're going to see a great move of God. And you can expect, and you can just take this one to the bank, you can expect you will be seeing revelations and hearing revelations from the Lord you have never had in your life. And when you do, I just counsel you, don't be afraid to declare what God is doing. Because God is going to reveal to you, whether you're sleeping or whether you're in the day or whether you're in meetings or whatever it is, God is going to reveal to you wonderful things you perhaps never knew before.
A great message from Pat Robertson. Say a prayer for his soul as well. Robinson, I should say. Robertson. Speaking of politics, John, too, as I think about him and, you know, the strange world in which we are living in today, Donald Trump, I understand they're going to try to indict him again. Politics has really changed since the time Robertson has run. I've never seen so many lawsuits. What's happening with Donald Trump?
Well, the Justice Department, the special counsel of the Justice Department has sent him something called a target letter. He says, let Mr. Trump know you're going to get a target letter. And what that means is that you have the opportunity to either appear before the grand jury or to make additional evidence available that might point to your innocence. This goes back to the alleged handling of classified documents down at his Florida golf club. Now, how does that sit with both Republicans and Democrats? The House Judiciary Committee Chairman Dick Durbin, a Republican from Illinois, had this to say today, and this may be something different than you've heard mostly from the GOP when it comes to Donald Trump going forward.
That'll be a decision by the Republican Party. I think there are more and more that are saying they have no future with Donald Trump. There's still a hardcore loyalist group that forgives everything he does. So we'll see.
We have no future with Donald Trump, talking about whether or not the question to Dick Durbin is whether or not Mr. Trump should pull out of the 2024 race.
Boy, they have not let that man alone. It's amazing what we have seen from January 20th when President Biden has taken over till this day. I mean, there's a certain fear of this particular president. Now, people are strongly divided over him.
Yeah.
Some people love him. Some people think, hey, it's time to move on. We should look at some of these other candidates. Mm-hmm. I wish I could see the future. It'd be interesting to see how the Republican Party ultimately shakes out. There's even dialogue now about whether President Biden will be able to run and whether or not somebody else should maybe step up. I believe Robert Kennedy he's polling like a 20% now. So,
Big money and big tech money is behind Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who is, very on the Democratic side, very unusual because he's anti-vax and some of those things that you do not normally associate with the talking points of the Democratic Party are the very foundation of who Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is, but some very big money going behind him.
I think we're in for a lot of surprises, John. I think, the coming months ahead, when it comes to this election cycle, there's going to be a lot to talk about.
Yeah.
The Supreme Court, I want to hit on them very quickly, too. They had a couple big decisions. I mean, they take their recess soon, their summer vacation. I was following a story about a U.S. mail carrier, and his case went all the way up to the Supreme Court because he did not want to work on Sundays. Any decisions coming down? I know they were looking at that. When's that ruling supposed to take place?
No decision on that, but the court surprised everybody today with a vote on voting rights in Alabama. And voting rights advocates were fearing that the case before the Supreme Court might actually undermine the Voting Rights Act, but that absolutely didn't happen. Surprise decision this morning, the court ruled that Alabama had diluted the power of black voters in congressional redistricting. What they did was they changed all of the boundaries of congressional districts to kind of edge out those areas where a number of black voters were. Yep. And so the ruling means Alabama's going to have to redraw the congressional map and make it an even playing field for everybody. What's interesting is Chief Justice John Roberts and Justice Brett Kavanaugh sided with the three liberal judges on the court in this decision.
The world of politics, huh? I know. Reading earlier today about a slate of GOP bills to protect natural gas-powered stoves from federal bans. It's the craziest thing in the world to think they're going to ban a natural gas-powered stove, but that suffered a setback. A group of House Republicans tanked a procedural measure moving the bill forward, and who knows? I guess maybe gas stoves are going to be a thing of the past one day. I don't know. What happened there? Have you been following that at all?
I haven't, because I don't have a gas stove, but it just doesn't make sense. You know. I mean, we've seen so many different things. It's like, of all things, and you've probably had this conversation with your friends, with all things going on, wait a minute, they're devoting all of this time to gas stoves? And as I recall, just kind of being on the sidelines of this, there is some empirical evidence from scientists to say, no, if you're going to make a pot of tea and just boil some water on the gas stove, no, you're not going to, contribute to the end of the planet.
Hey, just a quick programming note or a small correction, and we got a couple of calls in, John. I might have inadvertently mentioned that Durbin was a
That's a Republican. I misspoke.
Yeah, so small little thing. I do it all the time.
Getting so many information there. Yeah,
as a broadcaster, you know what it's like. I mean, there's so many times, and I want to thank Patrick Alog, who's on the phones, and Maggie, who's on my board here, my other producer. Quite often you're talking, I'll say Senator so-and-so or Congressman so, and you flip the two or you get the wrong party.
Right.
It happens to be all the time. Hey, another story you followed, we've been talking about, you and I, since the beginning of the week, is what's happening with the Los Angeles Dodgers. I know that 10 bishops now have come out and spoken against the blasphemy that the Dodgers plan to do on June 16th on the Solemnity of the Sacred Heart, when they honor a group calling themselves a Sister of Perpetual Indulgence, And Archbishop Joseph Nauman of Kansas City, Kansas, is the latest to do so. He said that he was appalled. He was disgusted by what the Dodgers are doing. Bishop Strickland of Tyler has spoken out. I believe he's leading a Eucharistic procession on the 16th, that day, from the Cathedral of Our Lady, Queen of Angels, to Dodger Stadium. What else is happening? Any word? What's the feedback on this? It's going to go forward, and Dodgers are kind of turning a blind eye?
The Dodgers are turning a blind eye to this, and of course the CatholicVote.org mass media campaign that we've been talking about here for the last couple of weeks is beginning, and now the Catholic League for Religious and Civil Rights is running ads on Los Angeles radio stations. And as a matter of fact, they started Tuesday. They'll run for another 5 days. They'll run into the beginning of next week, actually, and sending this message that bigotry against Catholics should not be tolerated. And maybe we should, as Catholics, and you and I were having this conversation on the air, that we really need to stand, and we were saying this last week, as Catholics, we really do need to hear our voice. We need to amplify our voices a little bit more and use these terms. And I know we want to do it with clarity and charity, but at some point in time, with clarity and charity, it is important to say that this is a message of bigotry.
That's right.
Because if that happened with any of our other brothers and sisters in denominations or anything, you've seen how things have gotten shut down over bigotry and other serious offenses against humanity. But it's time for us to kind of let our speak a little louder, I think.
George Weigel wrote a great piece. I find it, maybe I'll post it. He's a papal biographer, just a brilliant man, incredibly eloquent. And he talked about how this situation and what we're seeing in the culture right now, that anti-Catholicism really is a last acceptable prejudice in American elite culture, and they're getting away with it. One final note, Ashley Nerona is going to be stopping by for an update on the Pope. Here's something else that I want parents to be aware of. John, I don't know whether you're aware of this or not. I saw a story this morning. There's been controversy around the Girl Scouts because of their close association with abortion groups, right? We've spoken about that a lot. People don't buy the cookies. Why would the Girl Scouts have an association with abortion groups, right? Well, now they come up with a new patch for their girls. It's the LGBTQ plus Pride Month fun patch. Get your girl the LGBTQ plus Pride fun patch, right? Month fun patch. Now, how do you get it, right? Here's how your girls get it. I'm not advocating this. I'm just showing you how crazy it is. You can get it by attending a Pride celebration. Bring your little girl to a Pride celebration, or by studying LGBTQ plus history, or by creating art that celebrates leaders from the LGBT plus community. The Daily Wire, they have a movie on transgenderism titled "What Is a Woman?" starring Matt Walsh. That has become so popular, it has now crossed over 177 million views. And this is just stunning. We live in a very, very strange time. I actually saw a video, John, I didn't get to hear the audio, it was on the screen in my studio here, of San Francisco police officers saluting the gay flag along with the American flag and showing it the same reverence that the American flag has. Final thoughts from you here, as I only have a couple minutes left.
Yeah, it's time for mom and dad to start the evangelization at the kitchen table with their kids about what the Catholic Church teaches. And this is an opportunity. We can, yes, put a spotlight on all of this, and it is a head scratcher, but at the same time, it's an opportunity to really evangelize.
John, thanks for being here. I always appreciate your reporting and staying on top of the news for us. We'll catch up again soon, okay?
You bet.
That's John Harper. You'll hear his voice at the top of the hour as he delivers you the latest and the most important news of the day. I'm joined right now from Rome. It's a little bit late over there. Ashley Narona joins me. You often hear her on Morning Air. She is our Rome correspondent. And Ashley, it's great to have you with us this evening. Good evening.
Well, good evening to you, and so happy to be with you tonight, Drew. Yes, it's a little late, but I'm very glad to be able to chat with you tonight.
That was great. I know you were stateside not too long ago. I had the opportunity to see you here at our network headquarters, and you and your husband are back east. And then, of course, this news broke of the Holy Father needing surgery. Fill us in on what's happening, how serious it is. Give me the condition of the Holy Father and what we can do to help.
Absolutely. So the Holy Father is preparing to spend his second night in the hospital tonight. And the Vatican has told us they expect him to stay there for about 5 to 7 days. As far as his condition, Drew, well, he's awake, he's alert. He's even managed to crack some jokes. In fact, for the first time ever, his surgeon spoke to reporters. So typically it's been the Vatican itself that transmits messages, but for the first time this was allowed. And so the message came from this 57-year-old physician who is a colorectal specialist. And he said that the 3-hour operation was a success. Wow. He said that the Pope will be able to live a normal life after this. He noted that the Pope had no issues with anesthesia. Of course, that is despite his age of 86 years old. And he said that from this point forward, the Pope will need to be on a controlled diet, and he will need to take some special time for rest. In response to that, the Vatican has, in fact, canceled the Pope's obligations until the 18th of June. So that means papal audiences, etc. After that, the doctor also advised that he not do heavy lifting. So after that recovery period of about 7 to 15 days, he can go back to physical activity, but should avoid heavy lifting. But in addition to that, we have at this point heard that he is going to continue to go forward with, for example, his planned travel. Wow. So that trip coming up to World Youth Day to Lisbon at the beginning of August, and at the end of August, that trip to Mongolia, Drew.
Yeah. I've said before you came on, Ashley, a little bit earlier, and when I heard the news and I began the show, I really believe he is somewhat of a victim. So, I mean, John Paul II, he suffered too, right? And he did harsh penances and what was a mystic of himself. But this Pope here, with his sciatica, with his surgeries, with the suffering that he goes through, the prayer life of these shepherds, the shepherds of the Universal Church, the Vicars of Christ, I think they take on special crosses, some visible, some invisible. What are your thoughts on the suffering of this man? Because ever since he became Pope, it seems like he's been in a lot of torment.
Yes, he has. And of course, we've seen that for about the last year and a half because of issues with his knee and inflammation there. He has been using a wheelchair. He's been using a cane on and off. Also, just back in March, he spent 4 days in the hospital for a lung infection, for bronchitis. And then in 2021, he had that colon surgery. In fact, this is the same physician who performed this surgery yesterday. It was the same who performed the surgery for the diverticular stenosis of the colon when he had those 33 centimeters of his colon removed. And of course, we already know that the Pope had a portion of his lung removed many years ago when he was in seminary. And so, yes, indeed, he's certainly endured a lot of suffering. And I would say that here in Rome, we've even seen it. There are certain days where the Pope may have a public event and you can see it on his face that his sciatica is really bothering him. You can see that he's limping in a more pronounced way than typically. And so, yes, we've certainly watched his suffering in action.
I had read that one of the very last gestures before going under this abdominal surgery on Wednesday. He went before a relic of St. Therese of Lisieux. Do you know anything about that?
So there are actually relics of St. Therese of Lisieux, which arrived yesterday at the Church of San Luigi de Francesi. And yesterday's papal audience was completely dedicated to the little way of St. Therese and acknowledging her missionary zeal, even though she never left her home, you know, left to go to a foreign land and evangelize. Instead, she was a missionary right where she was. And that was yesterday's message. And so that's wonderful if he had that chance to pray there in front of the relic. In fact, at the hospital where he is at right now, at Gemelli Hospital, he's in the same room that Pope St. John Paul II was, right there on the 10th floor, a special suite there. And there is a relic of Pope St. John Paul II. There at the hospital. And in fact, JP2 had joked after spending, you know, after having to visit the hospital for various reasons, for example, his own colon surgery back in 92, then of course, after the assassination attempt in 81, he joked that Gemelli Hospital was becoming like the Third Vatican. In other words, after the Vatican itself, then Castel Gandolfo, which is where the summer residence of the Pope is located, and then Gemelli Hospital. Why not?
Well, we'll pray for the Holy Father. That's for sure. He certainly needs our prayers and his recovery. Final thoughts, Ashley, on this, because I had heard that, and you're probably familiar with what he had said. He said he thought his pontificate would be a short one, and he has, he's been in office quite a while at 86 years of age. You think he'd ever step down? And what do you think of that statement? What do you think he meant by that?
Well, he has spoken about the possibility of stepping down. And he's also spoken about the possibility of not stepping down. In other words, of remaining till his death. He has claimed that he has already written a letter of retirement that is sort of sitting there in case he should need to use it one day. But in the so ultimately, we really don't know one way or the other. But as far as being, as you said, you know, the importance of prayer, especially for our Holy Father, you know, on this feast of Corpus Christi, he was able to receive the Eucharist today. Fantastic. So it's very comforting to know that.
I'm going to pray the chaplet in about 30 minutes. We'll lift up his intentions. I will pray for you too, Ashley. Thank you for making time for us, and forgive my butchered Italian, but buonasera.
Oh, buonasera a te. It's sempre un piacere, Drew.
I look forward to seeing you September. All right, I'll be heading to Rome.
Great.
To Italy then. I hope our paths cross. Ashley, thanks.
God bless.
God
Take
bless
care.
You. That's Ashley Narona. It is bottom of the hour. When we come back, I want to share with you the story of a nun who died and whose body would not decay. It's an amazing tale. Stay with me. This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How are you aligning your financial plan with your Catholic values? Is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More information, including disclosures, at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
His power is made perfect in our weakness. This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me. We're about 30 minutes away from the chaplet. If you have a really important intention or need, why not call somebody else, have them join you? Maybe the business is in trouble. Maybe somebody's health is waning. Maybe the marriage is collapsing. Maybe the finances are crushing. We'll pray together. And we have an army of people. We have a family of people. Army's not the best word. I mean, I like what army visualizes, you know? We are the church militant. I just like family. Let's pray together, you know? Let's pray together. We'll do that in about 30 minutes for whatever your needs are. God is our Father, and we'll invoke him. All right? And, you know, God makes very visible to us, doesn't he? The invisible, he makes very visible to us his true presence in the Eucharist. Quite often we have this incredible phenomena of hosts that bleed. We have Eucharistic miracles. These are signs, you know. Blessed are those who believe without seeing. I've seen statues weep. I've been present during a Eucharistic miracle. I've seen incorrupt bodies. I've seen food multiply. I've been present during apparitions. I know God exists, and I think he's allowed me to see these things so I can communicate them to you with great affirmation, great confidence, great belief, great really great trust in the Lord's omnipotence. And so often in a time, and I'm taking a look at what's taking place in our culture right now, where religious are being mocked and vilified. We have the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, right? Group of gay men who dress up like nuns and they dance on crucifixes, on poles, and they just blaspheme the purity of these nuns and of our Lord and of our faith, really. The same time, I found it very coincidental. As evil rises, I think grace sometimes abounds all the more. You probably have heard the story of Saint Wilhelmina, the nun who, well, her body was exhumed recently, and it was found incorrupt. You might think, well, what's that mean? Well, let me give you the backstory. By the way, John Hanratty at Relevant Radio, if you go to our website, there's a great article called Sister Wilhelmina and the Miracle of Incorruptibility. And I want to share some of that with you. I'll share some other aspects of incorruptibility, some of the situations I've run across and what I know about it. But last month, the Benedictine Sisters, he writes, Sisters of Mary, Queen of the Apostles, they exhumed the body of their foundress. And her name was Sister Wilhelmina Lancaster. And this was in preparation for the transportation of her body to the new St. Joseph Shrine that was being added to their oratory. By the way, this is a small town. They're located in a place called Gower. It's a small town near Kansas City, Missouri. And preceding the exhumation, the nuns were told to expect nothing. It's probably going to be bones because, you know, they never embalmed her and they buried her. And this is about 4 years ago, and she was laid to rest in a very simple wooden coffin. And what they discovered when they began to undig the tomb and to exhume the body for transportation was amazing. They took the casket out, and they noticed that the coffin, there was some damage to it as they moved it. And one of the sisters peered through. There was a little crevice. She had a flashlight, and to her amazement, she saw a sock-covered foot. And any clothing along with the body, they say, should have deteriorated long ago. So they decided then to open the coffin and continue their inspection. And when they did that, it was discovered that the body of this nun had seemingly been preserved from decay. In the cold, damp, wet ground, somehow her body remained immune to decay. After 4 years of laying in this wooden coffin, no chemical treatment, no embalming, her tissues, her body was intact, no decomposition. And while the development bears all the outward signs of what we all think is probably a miracle, the Vatican's not said anything. The bishops there are very, very cautious about it. You know, the Diocese of Kansas City issued a statement, and they talked about how incorruptibility has been verified in the past, but it's very rare. This is not a common phenomenon. And, you know, the well-established process to pursue the cause of sainthood, they said, has not yet been initiated in this case yet. So her cause isn't even really open. Bishop Johnston, he said this. He says, I invite all the faithful to continue praying during this time that God's will in the lives of the Benedictines of Mary, Queen of the Apostles, for all women religious and for all baptized in our common vocation of holiness and with trust in the Lord. Bishop James Johnston said that the church has established a process for determining if someone is a saint and worthy of veneration, but no such process has yet been done on behalf of Sister Wilhelmina. It's understandable that many would be driven by faith and devotion to see the mortal remains of Sister, given the remarkable condition of her body. But visitors, now this is important, because if you're going to go and see this, and you can, you should not touch or venerate her body or treat them as relics. Right after the chaplet, in about an hour, I'm going to be joined by Preston Alex, one of my colleagues here, and he journeyed down there along with another man. There was a gentleman by the name of Royce Hood who had the opportunity to go down there, and he was on Morning Air with Glenn Leverance a little bit earlier in the week. He's a husband. He's a father of six. He loaded up his car. He drove from where he lived in Illinois all the way to Kansas City to see for himself. And he joined Glenn to share his experience. Listen to this.
You know, my wife and I have a very spiritual connection to the sisters. A number of years ago, we had a child that had something called Potter syndrome, and we knew he wasn't going to survive birth, and or he wasn't going to survive long after birth. And every night, my wife would listen to the Benedictines of Mary, Queen of the Apostles. They have wonderful, beautiful music that people can listen to, and it's just heavenly. And she knew there wasn't much we could do for him besides pray. His name is Fulton. And so she wanted him to know the sound of heaven. And so every single night during carrying Fulton to term, she would play the music at night and go to sleep with it. And so we did end up losing Fulton. That's a different story. But the point is, there was a spiritual connection. And so when we heard the news of Sister Wilhelmina, we felt very compelled to load up all six kids and drive 6 hours through Illinois and Missouri to this little town in the middle of nowhere to visit and to see it for ourselves. And we were just blown away and so impressed and inspired by the beauty, the tranquility, and the peace that we experienced there. And when I gazed upon Sister Wilhelmina, I felt a call to tell her story. And I didn't know yet if I would even get permission to tell her story, but I felt like, okay, I need to share not the miracle. The miracle of incorruptibility is like the sprinkle on the icing, but there's a bigger miracle with her life and legacy. And so I said a little prayer. I venerated her and I said, you know, if it's God's will, Sister Wilhelmina, with your intercession, I'm going to share your story with the world. And I was able to meet with the Mother Abbess and explain to them what my motivation was and what I was hoping to do. And they said yes. And so, long story short, we went home, took all six kids home, and they gave us permission. I literally jumped in the car and came right back, and I was embedded with the sisters for about a week on the grounds, being able to document aspects of the last few days that many people will never be able to experience or see. It was just absolutely incredible. The plan was to exhume the coffin and to carry that over to the new, you know, the final resting place. And so they discovered there was some damage in the coffin, and one of the sisters peeked inside with a flashlight and discovered a foot and a sock. And the sock, you know, should have been dissolved and disintegrated long ago, as should have the body. So yes, it was God's timing. God is interesting, you know, and these sisters are huge, as many of us in the Catholic tradition are. On dates are really, really important. So this last weekend, being Pentecost and the anniversary of Sister Wilhelmina's death, were very significant. And so I was able to participate and sort of behind the scenes go into some of the areas that other people weren't able to see, speak with people that most people don't get to speak with people, like such as some of the sisters. And they did just an absolutely beautiful procession with Sister Wilhelmina's body. And I just have to say, the first day we were there, there was maybe 30 or 40 pilgrims coming and going, mostly locals. A few people had driven in. This last weekend, I have no idea how many thousands, but it was 10,000 people would be my guess over the course of a few days, just coming and going, and people from all walks of life. I witnessed a couple of conversions where people were, one woman had not been to church in over 30 years and stepped into church and just started crying. And basically, you know, she was home and she knew she was home. Other people really weren't even Catholic were coming to see who is this? Who is this little nun? And hearing the Latin Mass in that particular instance, or hearing the Vespers where the sisters sing their prayers, was just so inspiring for so many people. So I really honestly can't wait to share this story with the world. You know, it's interesting. I was actually, just before I prayed and undertook this project, I'm an attorney by trade, and these days I'm sort of practicing less and less law because I'm feeling called more and more to evangelization through the media and through events and things that I produce. But anyway, I literally turned down a really big opportunity in Florida, which is where I'm from. And the afternoon that I turned it down was the afternoon I heard about Sister Wilhelmina. And so when we have faith, it's amazing how when we trust the Lord, things just happen. I'll give you another quick example of the spiritual side. The crew that I typically use for filming was not available. I had zero gear when the sister said yes, but I knew I needed to get there. So I ran to Best Buy, I grabbed whatever I could, I jumped in my car, and I didn't have a drone. We wanted a drone shot to illustrate all the people and some of the aspects of just outside, and my guy wasn't available. So Lord, if it's your will, we'll figure out the drone thing. As soon as we got to the Abbey, as soon as I arrived, the sister introduced me to the president of Benedictine College. And he said, is there anything you need? I need a drone. And he had me one there the next morning. And that's how the Lord works. I call it, you know, there's a film producer that I'm friends with. His name is Jason Jones. And he always says the Holy Spirit action plan. And so I've sort of commandeered that from him. And people were asking me, you know, what's your plan for this movie? Holy Spirit action plan is my plan.
That was Royce Hood. He was an eyewitness to the Incorrupt Body. When I return, I'll take a short pause. I'll give you some background. It's not just Sister Wilhelmina. Across the centuries, to the earliest days of the church, this phenomena has taken place. And I'll share with you a couple fascinating stories and why we know this is a little bit different than what the ancient Egyptians did or what they did with Stalin, Lenin, that and more. Coming right up.
The Drew Mariani Show.
Hi, Drew. Thank you. Thank you for your show.
This is the Drew Mariani Show.
Marvelous show on the radio right now.
On Relevant Radio.
Hey, if you're in the market for health insurance, well, our sponsor, the Catholic Order of Foresters, is here to help you and your family find the most cost-effective health plan. Learn more at relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Chaplet of Divine Mercy, live, coming up. You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, I can't wait. 10 minutes from now, we'll pray, okay? So call somebody, have them join you on the station you're listening to me. If you're on the mobile app, send them a text, an email. They can stream the show or use that app. We'll pray together, okay? Let's build our spiritual family. Let's storm heaven, right, with our prayers and our intentions. And do me a favor, too, if God answered your prayer. I know a lot of answer prayers come in every week to this program, and I'm so grateful for that. It just shows you the power of the prayer and our united time together. Email me, okay? It's drew@relevantradio.com. 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 Of course, Maggie's going to share on the air with you those intentions. She's on Twitter, and you can go to @DrewMarianiShow. And Maggie, I shouldn't be doing business on the air, but I'm going to do it anyway. I know you sent an email to Scott Dolstrom, our former web guy. He's no longer on board. John Hanratty is the web guy. So Maggie was trying to get the Twitter. Yeah, Maggie's trying to get our Twitter page on the website, right? Is that what you were trying to hook up?
Yeah, so maybe I should email John.
Because Scott's gone now, I think. So
that would explain a few things.
I meant to tell you, and I forgot about it too until I started talking about it. And there we go.
Roger.
Pretty amazing story, these incorruptibles, aren't they?
Have you
never saw one, right? When you were in Italy, did you get a chance to see any?
Well, I take that back. Well, I don't know if it's an incorruptible, though. I saw Mary Magdalene's foot.
Really?
At the chapel at St. Agnes.
Was it just bones or was it?
It's like a foot, but it looked like maybe it was encased in metal.
Interesting.
I don't know. I couldn't tell, but I was just like, that is a holy foot and I am going to pray in front of it.
Amen. Well, she's your patron too.
She is. Yeah. So I was Mary, my girl.
Maggie's got a great conversion story. Yeah. I always love when she shares that. But if you are praying for conversion, Mary Magdalene is your go-to girl. If you're just joining me, we were talking a little bit about incorruptibles. And right after the chaplet, Preston Alex, my colleague here at the network, he took his family down to see the incorrupt body of Sister Wilhelmina. This is not an unusual phenomenon. It is rare, but it's gone on for a long time. There's a little known incorruptible named Saint Sylvan. He was martyred and he was killed for his faith. And his body's 1,600 years old, 1,600 years old, but it's remarkably, remarkably preserved. But this is a fascinating phenomenon. As I said, I mean, God often shows himself in very visible ways to let us know that he's in control of everything. As we're about to pray at the chaplet, you might be weak in faith. Take a look at those Eucharistic miracles, those weeping statues, these incorrupt bodies, and know that God is above the laws of nature, and he can suspend them if he so chooses to. I hope they're here to edify your faith, right, to build you up. I mean, that's what they're here for. I mean, what we have is, in the sacrament, something far greater than any of this stuff. But I do think these are signs that help us who are weak in faith, maybe really to realize that God does exist. I think it's a fascinating phenomenon. Corpses that defy nature, failing to decompose, whether in whole or part. You know, many of the bodies exposed to the elements and have been kept remarkably preserved for the decades or centuries. It's an enigma to modern science. I remember I was over in Rome, and I happened to see the body of St. Lucy, who is incorruptible. She's up in Venice. And, in fact, if you get a chance to go there, check her out. What happened to Lucy, she spent 6 months underwater. Now, if you know anything about what happens to a body in water, I don't even want to describe it. I mean, it's horrific, right? St. Lucie spent 6 months underwater when Venice was flooded, right? The water filled her tomb. She is from the third century, which makes the keeping of her body, I think, even more challenging. Think about how far back that goes. You've got the witnesses of the body of St. Teresa of Avila, and not visible to the public, but they claim that her skin is actually tender to the touch and that it's in perfect shape. Last time she was exhumed, her long hair was combed as the nuns washed her body. They wrote that they could actually stand her up as they washed her. I know it sounds macabre. I know it sounds bizarre. But this is true. This is true. There's the story of St. Rita that tells us that she was found sleeping inside the locked convent. The saint woke up inside the convent, didn't know how she got there. She was accepted into the community after that. You know, God can do anything. There's a Bernadette, St. Bernadette, she's almost perfect. She has a bit of wax on her nose, but she is one of the most beautiful incorruptibles you'd ever see. And there's different levels of incorruptibility. Rita is all black, and some parts of her body actually look worn out. I often share the story of St. Anthony of Padua, who's one of my patron saints, because he was such a great orator, right? Such a great speaker. I prayed before his incorrupt tongue and vocal cords. The rest of his body turned to dust. But he was so gifted as a communicator that God preserved those. Why? Because God is in control of everything, right? And he gives us these very visible signs. That's what I want you to know is you're facing difficulty right now. I know your situation might seem overwhelming, that there's no way out of it. If God can preserve the tongue of a gifted orator, right? If he can preserve a body of a martyr who's been underwater for months, right? If he can defy the laws of nature, he can certainly vanquish your cancer, right? He can return the sight that you lost. He can heal those broken relationships. He can reverse your finances. Why do you put limits on God? Don't do it. Do not do it. Do not do it. You know, trust in God. Some of the more notable incorruptible saints are St. John Bosco, St. Pius X, St. Pius IX, St. Catherine Labouré, St. Maria Goretti, St. Padre Pio. I don't know if he's quite incorrupt anymore. I think he was for a period of time, but then I think his body began to decay. St. Stanislaus Kolska, St. Teresa of Avila, St. Vincent de Paul was another one. I mean, they go on. There's a great book. I read it years ago. I actually have it on my bookshelf at home. It's called, oh gosh, I don't know what it's called. I just know it's written by Joan Carol Cruz, okay? I think it's called Incorruptibles. I think that's the title of it. Incorruptibles by Joan Carol Cruz, I think is the title. Maggie's looking it up for me right now. But while incorruptibility does not automatically bestow sainthood upon somebody who's died, the discovery, thank you, Maggie. Maggie just said it's called The Incorruptibles by Joan Carol Cruz. If you want to read a good book, I think that would, that'll be an eye-opener. I mean, there's so many of them. It's absolutely amazing. You know, the laws of nature state that a body should be decomposing within days of dying, right? And just think about this for a minute. You know, and again, I don't want to get too macabre. I don't want to get too gruesome. I don't want to get too dark here. But look at the stages of decomposition after one dies. 1 to 3 days after death, internal organs begin to break down. 3 to 5 days after death, the body begins to bloat and foam, containing blood, it will ooze from the mouth and the nose if it's not taken out. 8 to 10 days after death, the greenish hue of the skin turns red and blood starts to decompose. 2 to 3 weeks after death, the nails and the teeth start to fall out. 1 month after death, bacteria from the intestinal tract begins to eat away at the internal organs, causing them to liquefy. And when the process of putrefaction is complete, only the skeleton remains. And heat can speed up that process. Cold can slow it down by not much. So in normal cases, this can take place within months of a person's death. And yet incorruptible saints have been preserved, exposed to the elements, centuries after death. Right? It's an amazing phenomenon. I mean, it really is. St. Catherine Labarang, who was given the miraculous medal. And my personal theory on this, and I'm no theologian, I just think this is God's way of shining a light on a particular saint and their incredible life of heroic virtue. I really do. This is a rare phenomena. It has been observed throughout history. The Catholic Church does not officially endorse any particular explanation for incorruptibility, but it does recognize it as a sign of holiness and of sanctity. And the bodies of incorruptible saints, I think, are a blessing. I think they are an inspiration for you and for me, you know, and the list goes on. St. Teresa of Margaret, St. Vincent de Paul, St. John Vianney. I look at some of these saints like Vianney, right? The cure of ours and the sacrifice of this man, you know. Bernadette of Lourdes, she was another one who sacrificed. St. John Bosco. Pius IX is one of my favorite popes. He's another one. St. Zita. I mean, you go through the list. They go on and on and on. Look, God's in control. That's the bottom line. That's the message I get from here. He exists. He calls us to sanctity, to holiness, to purity, and above all, to love. And I think those who have refused to decay, that's a gift from God to show us, you know, the power of holiness. Let's pray together when I return, okay? I'll be right back.